Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 188, even closer to 200, of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So, Summer, we don't have any announcements, right? That we know of?
No, I don't think we do. Not a lot has been coming out of all the camps from, South Africa. And then
that's true.
Kate and, or is it Kat? I never know.
Just Katrina. I'll just keep saying safe.
Katrina and Sam are all over the West Coast this week. They were in Los Angeles.
For real, all over.
During the Oscar week. And then now they're up in Seattle, I guess, for the Emerald City Comic Con, which sadly I am not going to. But that's okay.
So the answer is no. And
no.
No, Ginger,
so how are
don't.
You? How are you, Ginger?
I was just about to ask you. You know, I'm okay. I will say that after I'm not going to say how long, although it doesn't matter. It was definitely more than 1 month. After a hiatus from going to the gym, it wasn't started intentionally, but it was continued intentionally. I stopped going because I was sick. I go to the gym in the mornings because that's the only way I can make it fit in my day and do it reliably and consistently. Because when I'm home from work, I'm not leaving the house. I'm not leaving the house. I'm staying. And but I go in the morning. So that for me, it takes prep, pack the night before, pack your food, pack your work stuff, get the cat stuff ready, whatever. And because I had to do anything with the cats. So for me to go, obviously it's a good thing, but I have to be like mentally ready and prep and all that stuff. So I went on a Tuesday. It was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. But during Thanksgiving week, and I was fine all day until about 6 or 7 o'clock that night before I was going to a guitar lesson. And I had a sore throat and I thought, oh, I'm just tired, which of course we're always tired. But it was different than normal. And so long story short, what I thought was just me being tired, that's the story of that. That's my middle name.
I shouldn't have even asked. I should have known that was a loaded question asking how you are.
There you go. That day I realized I wasn't well, I was getting sick. And so I didn't go to the gym first because I wasn't feeling well. And then it was like Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving. So, that continued to like 2 weeks because I really didn't feel well. And I had to get, try harder to get back on the horse. Well, I think I tried to go one time and I just like my lungs weren't having it because I had a cold. It was a bad cold. And so long story short, again, that 2 weeks ish extended into, like I said, it was more than a month. It was at least a month. So anyway, but I've been going the last 2 weeks and I'm that makes me happy. I'm back.
I just need everyone to know that the conversation that just happened is so true to how a conversation with Ginger is, because to tell you that she started going back to the gym and she feels good about it, she had to start with a backstory that goes back 3 months. She is the queen of backstory, because I promise you, I would have understood the story if she just said, well, I haven't gone for a while and I started going in and I'm great. But I had to have, there was not nearly enough specifics for her to be happy and have it be a true Ginger story.
So I guess I'm the announcement this week.
Announcement.
So I'm okay.
I'm the gym.
Summer. That's awful. No, it's a good thing. But yes, I'm back to being, it was rough at first. I was tired and I'm still tired, but it seems to have like, I'll have like 3 great days. And then like the next day I'll get the same amount of sleep as I did before. And then I'll feel like ass. I'm like, what happened to me? Yes, I know I'm aging, but like, dude, I got the same. I ate the same stuff. I slept the same amount, whatever. So that's how I feel for the most part. How are you? How have you been doing? I haven't seen you in a little bit.
I'm doing great. And that's how Summer tells a story. All right. Now on to our read-along.
Nah. You got to give me something. You don't have to give me a backstory, but you got to give me something.
I got nothing. I'm doing good. And now, on to our read-long. This week, we will start. We're going to discuss two chapters, but we're going to start with chapter 34 entitled Daddy.
And that bugs me more than anything. I can't. That is almost worse than your.
Really?
Yes.
Sorry.
That is almost as bad as I think the Gilly is a Gilly, Gailey, Gailey. I think Gilly is worse only because there's a visual and that makes it even worse. But oh my gosh, don't ever do that again, please. Eileen P. starts us off. She writes, in regards to the chapter title, Daddy, I would like to thank Diana Gabaldon for providing so much history of Jamie during his 20 years apart from Claire, but leaving a wee bit to discover. I didn't see this coming. Roger, Bree, and Claire clearly missed something in their research. I like that too, that we don't know everything and we still kind of learn along with Claire.
Well, and this chapter provides the sixth sense moment
that you were looking for
that I've been referencing. And it's like this chapter fills in all the holes for all those awkward moments from the previous like three or four chapters that you can now go back and look at those awkward moments and see them in a whole different light.
So Jamie and Claire are in the middle of the yoga move called Cookie Jar Asana when this young woman walks in who called Jamie Daddy. And Summer and says, who is that woman? Claire is understandably taken aback. Forget that she's all a splay. Daddy? WT mother F and F. Jamie moves quickly and pulls up the quilt. He demands from the girl what she's doing there. Quote, I came with mother, unquote. Oopsie. Jamie turns white. Claire says, quote, it came flooding back. In her mind, she's thinking, it came flooding back before the rest of the sentence. So my question is, what came flooding back? Because she goes straight into talking about, does she mean the way Larry looked? Or, you know what I'm saying? That didn't make sense. It just didn't follow with the rest of a sentence. So Jamie is getting dressed quickly now. He throws the quilt at Claire.
No, what came flooding back was the color in his face. Because she said, he jerked violently and all the color went out of his face, period. It came flooding back as the sound of rapid footsteps sounded on the wooden staircase.
Okay. See, sometimes I need to be literal when I'm not. So he throws the quilt at Claire. He's barely covered his giblets when another woman walks into the room. Dun, dun, dun. And Summer, tell us who it be.
I don't know how to pronounce her name.
Oh, girl, you do.
Leg Come hair. On. It's leg hair. Only now, yes. She's a Fraser.
Blech. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Lisa T. writes, the description of Jamie reminds me a bit of Jamie being described as the devil. Not evil, but a red beard, nakedness, and his fury conjure quite a picture. Eileen P. writes, no, 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 it can't be true. Jamie married Leary? Of all the people, why did he marry her? How could he marry Leary after what she did to Claire? How could he even marry anyone after Claire? Clearly, Claire was misdirected in her time traveling and has not only gone back in time, but she has traveled to a parallel universe where Jamie would actually marry Leary.
Now, this is a parallel universe.
This is so wrong. Stop the world. I want to get off.
Okay. So this is where this show is going to get a little sticky.
Oh, that's coming up. Don't go there yet.
Because Diana very specifically says, you know, how could he? Oh, I am jumping ahead, but she's like, how could he, knowing what he did to me? Maybe he, and then she says quite clearly.
Exactly. So we're going to get there. We all got words about that. Leary is mad. Quote, it's true. It's true. It's the Sassenach witch. How could you do such a thing to me, Jamie Fraser? Unquote. Claire finally recognizes her only from her voice. Or now that she hears her voice, she recognizes her. She was 40, Leary was. No longer slender. her fair skin weathered. The same eyes, though. "He's mine," she hisses. "Get you back to hell from the hell that you came from and leave him to me. Go, I say." I love Diana's next lines. Quote, as I made no move to obey, as I didn't go to my hell, she picks something up to throw at her, but Jamie takes it from her. Jamie tells her he'll speak with her later and shoves her out the door. Claire is now shaking and getting dressed as quickly as she can. She's heard and seen enough. Jamie's freaking out. He says he can explain everything, but she doesn't believe him. She's done. Jamie is desperate to explain it to her. He demands she listen to him. He's tall, white, with Leary's nail marks down his face, looking really Viking-y. People are pounding the door to get back in. Jamie tells Claire that the girl is not his daughter. Claire is making assumptions, and we know what that does, right? But she won't listen to his explanation. He tells her that he'll go settle things, and then they'll talk. Claire is lost. She is inconsolable. She had left Bree, and now she felt betrayed. She is utterly furious that she, of all people, would be his bride, meaning Leary, of course. She doesn't hold it against him that he married, period. But she can't believe it was to her. Eileen P. writes, "It is heartbreaking to witness Claire's devastation of losing Jamie. She thought she had regained all she had lost. Not only is the life with Jamie gone, but she also has lost all that she sacrificed for that life. She has nothing." Lisa T. writes, "I thought it worth noting that at this point, both Jamie and Claire are no longer naked and vulnerable. Jamie is wearing his breeks, and Claire is at least covered up by the quilt, not unlike her mourning of unexpected guests at the whorehouse. This time, the guests are both unexpected and most unwelcome." Again, the practical and symbolic reference to clothes and a variation of the theme in the whorehouse where Claire couldn't seem to find a proper dress. And then the line we all know we will reverberate through our ears, and this is what Summer's talking about, and make us weep into our whiskey as we rewatch season 2 in horror. Quote, "But to marry that woman, the spiteful, sneaking little bitch who had tried to murder me at Castle Leoch, but he likely didn't know that," a small voice of reason in my head pointed out. "Well, he should have known," unquote. That can't happen.
Well, he knew.
I know. That's what I mean. That line can't happen.
So it's going to be, it's different.
It's going to be, yes. Lisa T. writes, "This should make for an interesting plot point in season 3, as Jamie does know in the show about Leary and the witch trial." Then Claire remembers the little things. Jamie taking Fergus aside, sending him ahead, she thought it was to tell Ian and Jenny that they were coming. And the other thing that's funny is that now she realizes Ian and Jenny knew, and yet they hadn't said anything to her face. She had only one option, she felt, to return to the future. Jamie comes back to the room to speak with her. He had shaved. She notices this is an echo of what young Ian had done the day before, cleaning before confronting his parents. Jamie just wants to explain. When she says that it seems a bit late for that, he replies, "You never used to be unreasonable," unquote. That's not something you let out of your mouth. We find out that Leary and the girls don't live with him, or I should say vice versa. "Their marriage was a mistake," he says.
And also that they're not his girls.
Yes, he already said that.
He did, but he explains how they're not his girls.
Yes, the children aren't his. Leary had been a widow with two young children when they wed. Eileen P. writes, "Good. Jamie admits the marriage to Leary was a mistake and the two children are not his. Damn him. He still married Leary. Couldn't have mentioned this horrible fact when he and Claire were getting reacquainted back in Edinburgh. Claire has every right to be furious." Now, this line is sad. Quote, "I felt a small wave of something like relief on Brianna's behalf. She was the sole child of Jamie's heart, at least, even if I," unquote. Now, Claire has
Claire.
Exactly. There's a little sign. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's still intent on going, however. He's intent on not letting her go anywhere. Here's Claire's gripe. "You should have told me the minute I came." And of course, she's right. He says he married Leary because he was afraid. They get into a very heated discussion about how difficult it was for each of them, these 20 years apart. And this is the discussion that they should have had earlier. But then Jamie may have a point. If he had told her, he thinks Claire would have turned and left just as quickly as she entered the print shop. Hi, kitty. He kisses her nicely and she feels it. But she's still intent on leaving. He kisses her passionately and draws blood. She slaps him. He bites her lower lip and then plummets into her. He throws her onto the bed and pins her down. They're both very aroused. They begin to go at it, and they end up rolling off the bed, animalistic passion and need, when they're doused with cold water.
Dude, this is the beginning of the end of my love affair with Jenny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, that exactly. So Jenny says it's for the propriety of the situation. Quote, how could you? Running like a wild beast and not caring if all the house hears you. Unquote. Jamie says he is ashamed and he gets up and walks out. Lisa T. writes, in a variation on the beast theme from the previous chapter, Jenny accuses Jamie of running like a wild beast. She thinks that he was attacking and raping Claire. I think that Jamie is mortified and very, very angry at Jenny, Leary, and the entire situation. He's used to being in control and he isn't here. He is a mere beast on all fours. Also, when he leaves the room, he expects Claire to be there when he returns. Just like the scene at the brothel, her dress is ripped, exposing her breasts. She can't leave the house in a ruined dress, just as she couldn't leave the brothel.
I just think it's weird that they like prop her up on... Okay, this is like the second coitus interruptus of this whole chapter, right?
Yeah.
And the response to the first one is a giant argument. The second time this happens... They like prop her up on pillows and they're like, do you need anything? And she's just like, yeah, this is so awkward. I don't know. If twice in one day, that's a little much. Like at some point you need to lock the door.
Oh, I wonder if they had locks. Probably the bolt locks. Probably like the wooden, like the little panel things that like the bar that comes down. Probably not like an actual key lock.
It locks because I think there's a mention of locking the door at a different time.
Well, then that was their fault to begin with. Anne S. writes, I feel like this big fight between Jamie and Claire is their shared grief, hurt, and loneliness of the time apart all coming out at once. They both blame and accuse each other of every perceived or actual betrayal possible. TV side note, this will be great on screen, and I hope they keep the part of Jenny pouring water on them. That would be awesome.
Well, Ginger, don't you mention it, because anything we mention gets cut out.
That's not me. That's
I'm just saying. Don't agree with her. Don't you dare agree with her.
I have a hard time, Anne continues, believing that Claire just ups and leaves so easily. After everything she went through to give up her life and travel through time to be back with Jamie, and then to simply run away at the very first roadblock seems
Hurt. She's angry.
Of course she is. Seems something a child would do, not a woman in her late 40s. I know she wants Jamie to chase after her, but in her dialogue, she seems determined to leave forever. She just gives up way too easily. She would never have buckled under to Leary at Castle Leach. Eileen P. writes, quote, because I was afraid. Jamie admits to Claire that the reason he didn't tell her about his marriage to Leary. Jamie might be brave, but that doesn't mean he is without fear. What he has always feared is losing his loved ones. 20 years before, he sent Claire and his unborn child away through the stone so they would be safe. In prison, he assured his family's safety by cooperating with Lord Grey. At Hellwater, he gave in to Geneva's demands to keep his family safe. He was afraid to tell Claire about Leary because he was afraid of losing her after finally reuniting with her. He could not bear to be separated from her again. In their argument, we feel the anguish and the anger of the 20 years apart. Martina P. writes, in the brief time it's taken to get decent, daughter has been replaced by mother. It's great that Claire doesn't recognize Leary until her name is called, and then it all floods back. The weathering and aging of the once slim and pretty Leary is a shock and a further visual reference to Claire as different. Leary, burdened by a harsh life, two children can have no real idea of why a woman significantly older than she looks younger and still has power. Jamie, witchcraft could well be the best explanation available to Leary. Her timing is both comic for its physicality and tragic for it changes the atmosphere of the room. What was a place of joy and contentment is now one of anger and confusion. And Claire's first instinct is to run, despite her previous statement and his very recent reiteration that she would never leave him. The fight, reminiscent of their confrontation when returning to Castle Leah after Fort William and Outlander, then as now, it's another establishment of themselves as a couple again, of them taking each other as they are now.
And that was chapter 34. Moving on to chapter 35, entitled Flight from Eden.
Lisa T. writes, the title suggests that Claire is leaving her own Eden, the garden mentioned in the book of Genesis in the Bible. She is in shock and devastated. Jenny thinks that Jamie was raping Claire, and Claire reassures Jenny that that was not the case. Jenny finds Claire something to put on. She asks where Jamie is, and Jenny, thinking she's scared, says she won't let him go at her again. Jamie leaves the house, going to the hill. He goes there if he's troubled, Jenny says. Janet tells Claire that Leary and her daughters had headed back to Balriggan, where they live, and that Jamie had made them go. Janet is beside herself and apologizes. She says it was her that told Leary that she was there, that Claire was there. She hadn't meant to cause a Kebby Levy, you see. Now, that I love. I think that has to be the episode title, Kebby Levy. I love that. Then we find out something a little more sinister. Or confusing, maybe. Janet says that her mother had told her to go tell Leary.
Boo.
I know. Claire wants to go immediately. And then Jenny answers, I think that's best.
Right? Jenny? She is no longer my second favorite Fraser.
Eileen P. writes, I'm stunned that Jenny had Janet tell Leary about Claire. It is such a betrayal. No matter how afraid Jamie was of telling Claire about Leary, I am convinced that he would have done so because there would have been no way to hide it. He would have told her in his own way. Would it have been upsetting for Claire? Yes, but mainly because it was Leary.
She's a busybody.
Oh my goodness.
She clearly needs more things to do. Maybe she should have had some more kids.
Oh, Lord. Summer, she had a lot.
She needs to stay clear out of her brother's business. I know she feels responsible for Leary. Oh, I know she feels responsible for Leary. However, that being said, she needs to back out and let her brother be an adult and do his thing.
Anne S. writes, given Claire's thoughts about Jenny and how she was her only close woman friend and seemed even like a sister to her, makes Jenny's betrayal sting all the more. Would you really believe that the Jenny we knew would really act like that? TV side note. I hope they show the fight between Jamie and Jenny. I love their time on screen together. Oh, they're brilliant. And then I wrote, which echoes what Summer said, I wrote, whoa, this is where people start having issues with Jenny. Claire prepares to leave Lallybroch for the last time. She has a dagger for protection. She has food and ale, but she left the pictures of Bree for Jamie. It was still autumn and thus cold. She takes a horse and Jenny is bodily helping her to leave. She even tells her, Godspeed.
Yeah, right. I got words. Like for, like Claire's just like, I didn't look back. I didn't answer her. She's like, I have nothing to say to you. And I was taught right that if you don't have anything nice to say, you don't say anything at all. Angry.
Lisa T. writes, Jenny did everything she could, very properly, to kick Claire out of Lallybroch, even leading Claire's horse out. As devastated as Claire is, she notices the difference in this parting when she says the last time they had parted as sisters. This is one more blow to Claire. Not only is she an outlander, in one terrible morning she has lost her husband and family. I really hope we get to see Katrina and Laura do this scene. There's so much going on here. So Claire is traveling with the horse until dark, and then she makes camp. And then in the morning, she continues. She goes as far as she can and then leaves the horse and walks on. She stops at the trunk of a fallen aspen. And no, I did not have time to look up the symbolism of aspen, although I think that was the tree that was near the water when we were talking about smugglers. So that's a few episodes back. Claire's thinking of her love for the different people in her life. Brianna and Frank, etc. She'd had to balance her feelings with compassion, wisdom, judgment. Yet with Jamie, she had been completely free. She hadn't held back. That's part of what had made him so safe. She had come to him with everything, with trust, leaving nothing behind. And for a few days, she'd known perfect joy, Diana writes. She cries for their love. She mourns Jamie. She remembers his voice. Quote, "Do you know what it means to say again, I love you and mean it?" She did. "And with my head in my hands beneath the pine trees, I knew I would never mean it again." Unquote.
Ugh, she's so dramatic, that Claire.
Just a little bit.
"I would never mean it again." It's like Scarlett O'Hara. God is my witness. I will never go hungry again.
Claire is surprised by a stalker who comes right upon her. And who is it but young Ian? He says that his uncle sent him. She, however, will have nothing to do with him. He says that it isn't what she thinks, but she won't listen. He says that Jamie needs her, truly. He demands she hear him out, and so she agrees. So before I go on, okay, that's all fine and dandy, whatever. The thing I never understand about scenes like this in any book where someone's like trying to say something or saying, but just hear me, but just listen to me, but really you need to hear me. And the other person's like, I'm not going to listen, or whatever. You could have saved yourself 20 minutes if you had just freaking yelled in their face what you were saying. Yell, give them the drama part. I'm going to get ahead of myself. Just say, Leary shot Jamie. That's all you got to say. Jamie shot. He's dying. You don't have to tell this whole long story. You can tell, you have a day to get back to Lallybroch. You don't need to tell her right now. Because this whole time, I can only envision you or a lot of other people with me, like me trying to tell a story. Yes, Ginger, I get it. What is the point? Yes, Ginger, what are you trying to get at? And Ian's like telling her like the last 3 days. Really, Ian?
So you're implying that you are like Ian.
Ian?
You are the Ian, no, like of the story.
Ian's of my life. Ian's like me of your life. I mean, I'd love to be an Ian. There's nothing wrong with Ian. So,
well, young Ian, there's plenty of things kind of wrong with him. First of all, being he has no eyebrows currently. No, you don't have a lot of eyebrows either.
Why do you say that?
They're very thin. Like they have a very high arched eyebrow. They're not bushy at all.
Okay, there you go. I'll go with that. I can go with the fact that they're not bushy, but to say they're thin, I mean, yeah, they're not thick. I will go with that. They're kind of sculpted. I guess you say sculpted, even though I don't. All I really do is I don't pluck them. Whenever I get my hair done, I have them. Here's another little behind the scenes tidbit for you, dear listener. Whenever I get my hair highlighted, she only waxes your face. I don't get my face waxed, but she waxes like just like a tiny little strip above the eyebrow and below the eyebrow just to get the hairs that are around. So she does help kind of, I guess, clean it up, shape it a little bit. But Summer's right. I don't have like this thick, long, glossy hair. I don't know. We all have our own little things. Apparently, I don't want to say they're my superpower because they're not, but that's one thing that I don't have to do anything for. They're just there. But you're right. So Claire agrees to listen to Ian. So he begins. So Jamie had come back to Lallybroch from the hill, and he finds that Claire is gone, and there's a stramash. Jamie and Jenny fight. Finally, he leaves. He's saying he is going to find Claire. Leary shows up, however, and makes a scene, pulls him off the horse. He takes her into the house, and she shoots him. Now, can you remember your reaction to this line? This is Ian. Quote, "He sent me to find you because he's dying." Unquote. When you have no other information than that, and you know that you have like half a book left, I mean, I think you take it seriously. When you haven't read it, you have to just go by what's on the page. But do you remember back to the first time you read that? Did you kind of freak out?
No. Mostly because Claire's there.
Oh, that's true.
Actually, let me go a little further back. Mostly because I read the fourth book first.
Oh, that's right. And Jamie's alive.
And Jamie is in the fourth book. Sorry, also,
that's funny.
Claire's present. Whatever has been done to him, she can probably help more than most people in that time period. And also, everyone in these last two chapters has been a gigantic drama queen. So I'm sure it's not nearly as bad as everyone's painting it to be. I mean, I'm not saying he's not injured. I'm just saying.
Maybe this episode should be called The Drama Queens because...
Seriously.
Even Ian's a little dramatic. If not dramatic, he definitely takes his sweet to get there. So Claire is understandably suspicious. Quote, she says... Sorry. She says, quote, "If you're lying to me, Ian Murray, you'll regret it to the end of your life." Unquote. So Ian had found Claire in one day, even though she'd been traveling for two. They got back to Lallybroch in one. Now, the gunshot wound, she learned, was in Jamie's left arm. The ball had gone into his side, through the arm into his side. So whether he was actually dying or not, she couldn't take the chance. And she knew that Jamie knew that. So she decides to go back. Two times she'd left Jamie, knowing she'd never see him again. And two times now she'd gone back. Eileen P. writes, Jamie was shot by Leary. Please let him be like a cat with nine lives. Yes, I know he's already used up some, but there must be still a few left. Hurry, Claire, save him.
Did she write that with that kind of... I mean, in a way that was indicative of the voice you just used?
Kind of. She used exclamation points.
So that's your voice for exclamation points?
Summer, we all know what happens. I was being kind of silly. I think she was being kind of silly.
I'm just saying. Is that all I have to do to get you to use that voice is put exclamation points at the end of a sentence?
No, because you don't give me comments. You say what you're going to say. Martina P. writes, Claire's fear that Jamie had remarried had been realized, and his lack of honesty hurts more. Leary doesn't help either, but it puts a context to Jamie's curt stopping of the questions of Ian and Fergus. Jamie finally admits it was his fear that stopped him. The strength and certainty we have so often seen in Jamie makes this a shocking statement. Their fight is a masterclass in expressing the unconscious and the emotional. In their rational state, Jamie would not blame Claire for abandoning him, and Claire would see the contradiction in her being angry that Jamie had married someone else, considering Frank. Jamie and Leary compare strongly to Claire and Frank. A failed marriage, one partner having to live with the knowledge that their spouse loved another. 20 years of fear, abandonment, blame, love, and lust are expressed both verbally and physically, both needing to remark each other. Claire rakes her nails on Jamie, just like Leary did, and Jamie fiercely kisses Claire as he imagines Frank has done. Like in, I think, DIA, where Claire describes their sexual relationship as risk and reward, Jamie held her body while Claire holds his soul, and he knew it. Both are aroused by this release, and both act on a primal instinct to reclaim what is theirs. Jenny is, as usual, very interesting, despite her guarded welcome to Claire. The sisterhood is strong. She will, as probably the only one who could, protect Claire from Jamie, if she wants it. Jenny, assured by Claire that there was equal blame, sees her with usual perspicacity, the truth of the situation. While Jamie is gone, Claire, assisted by Jenny, points her horse toward Craignadun. Her slow flight leaves her with little opportunity but to reflect on the risk she has taken in returning. The hope that she has carried through 20 years has been shaken, and the hope of being able to be herself again is gone. Claire now is able to rationalize some aspects of the Leary situation, especially given in the book. Jamie doesn't know about Leary's involvement in the witch trial, and won't till much later. She can accept his need to marry again. In essence, she did too. The similarity between the last argument with Frank and what she thinks is her last with Jamie, a lack of honesty, is most upsetting. I don't think it's entirely fair, especially in this case, but fear and love, even in Claire, aren't always sensible. As Claire and young Ian travel back, he tells her of the events she missed. Jamie's dying. Leary shot him after a lot of crying and sniveling. I love Ian's distinct fighting style. As he fights for her, it proves that, as usual, Myrta is right. Leary will be a girl till she's 50. Lisa T. writes, Claire finds a way back to Jamie through her medical skills. I find it fascinating that she first met Jamie when she was tending to his arm and shoulder, and now she has found her way back to him in a similar way. They have a chance to begin again.
And that was chapter 35, Flight from Eden. Join us next time when we discuss chapter 36 and chapter 37. 36, Practical and Applied Witchcraft, and 37, What's in a Name?
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.